Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, using AI to detect fake images created by AI. Or some such. Please stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Welcome back from our short break.
Yeah, we tried last week, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah, combination of factors. The biggest thing was the sound quality. It was just unlistenable. I had to record from home on a different mic from usual, and it was really bad because I picked the, you know, I plugged in a decent mic, but Skype chose to listen to the microphone dangling from my headphones, which was rubbing on my collar the entire time.
Oh, I didn't notice it when we were talking. Yeah. I could tell you were on a different mic, but it didn't sound that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm on a different mic. And you're like, okay. So I don't know. I'm sure it was way more noticeable after I processed the audio. It was probably really subtle at first, but mm-hmm. The processing the audio makes small noises pop out. But anyway, enough about us. What do you think about us? But we do have a little bit of housekeeping, a couple of fun little updates, show-related updates, namely The Expanse, season 3 ending, so good.
It was amazing. This show now takes the top spot for me in terms of sci-fi shows ever.
Yeah, it's great. I mean,
yeah, I'm sorry, Babylon 5, you're in second place now.
Yeah, so don't worry, we're not going to spoil anything. But I will say, I noticed a close-up of, like, Holden in a vac suit. Mm-hmm. They put so much detail in just, like, the writing on the helmet and stuff. I mean, it is over-the-top production.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's so good.
I don't know if you caught it a while back, but there was one scene where a character was looking at a heads-up display in a helmet suit camera and stuff. And there in the tiny corner where it was showing her a view of the stuff, like a camera view of what behind her, down in the written in the text in the tiny corner of that was, objects may be closer than they appear. Yeah.
It's so good. It's just so good. It's so good. And they rejiggered the story very cleverly to sort of fit it into a reasonable length.
They adapted it for TV very well, and I think a large part of that is because the authors of the book are very involved in the show. And so, like, for them, I think their approach to it has not only been, well, here's our chance to adapt it for television, but here's our chance to change some things that we would probably do differently to make the story better.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. So if you haven't been watching The Expanse, it's really worth doing it. Season 1 was took a little bit to get started, but still it was just amazing to watch. Just the effects alone.
Yeah, if you're put off by the beginning of Season 1, stick it out until like the fourth episode and you'll be hooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're actually going to be talking about, you know, special effects is something we're going to be talking about today, but a couple of other things I wanted to let people know about. Amazon. Amazon. What? I think we talked about this last week, but that didn't go live. I got a Fire TV Cube.
Yes.
Which is pretty much exactly what you'd expect it to be. But the thing with the different Alexa devices that it's really interesting, and this also relates to recent news that they're latest generation of Fire tablets are going to be, you can sort of switch them into show mode so that they're like an Echo Show, and you can put them in a stand and treat them like an Alexa device.
Okay.
The interesting thing about all the different ones, because we've got a tap, you know, we have probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of form factors, six including the TV.
Okay.
7 including the stick, but I don't use it. And all of them, it's cool because all of them are different. Like, all of them are optimized for the exact thing that they're for. So it's not like you just sort of blindly take this assistant and try and jam these skills into every different form factor and they maybe work better or worse. They just don't make them work. Like, they're just, no, sorry, it doesn't do that. because it's almost like they would rather not offer a kind of mediocre experience with some of the things. They'd rather just remove them. So things like not everything, not all of them support drop-in.
Right.
Like this sort of, their sort of FaceTime equivalent that allows you to just like, boom, hello, I'm talking to you now.
Right.
But the Cube adds some features that of course won't end up on other ones. The Cube allows you to change the HDMI inputs on your TV by just talking to it, which is like the coolest thing ever. And it also allows you to control your TV volume, not the volume of the Cube, but the TV volume. Well, also the volume of the Cube, but that, those two features are the only reason I still have the TV remote, you know, laying around and charged up. So yeah. Now I can ditch that and just tell it to, you know, change inputs. And since it has that, keep, man, just turns the TV on and off. So like those three things are the only reason I have the old remote. So what's the amazing user experience this creates is the TV can be off and it doesn't matter what input it's on because we've got an Xbox and a Roku and a Wii U and the Cube. So there's four different things and we're regularly changing between the inputs. I can walk downstairs and say, you know, she, you know, the name, turn off the lights and then say the name, play The Expanse. And it turns on the TV, it switches to HDMI 2, which is where I've got it plugged in, and starts playing the show right where I left off if I was just watching it on my phone.
That's amazing.
It's so first world, but like, it's like, you just feel like you're in Star Trek or something. It's so great.
Like, you don't have to pick up remotes and find remotes and sit down and make those decisions about, okay, I need to go to HDMI 2 and I need to set volume to such and such. And yeah, it just takes, like, it just becomes a seamless thing where you just speak into the air what you want to happen and it happens.
Yeah. Like for me, it's like, I'll press the on button because I don't know where the remote for the TV actually is right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I come downstairs and I would turn it on by, as I'm passing the TV on the way to the couch, I'll turn it on with the button on the actual TV, sit down, right, and then realize it's on the wrong input. It's like, but I gotta get back up now.
Gotta find the remote.
I gotta find the Roku. I've been watching Roku up until we got this thing. So it was like, I'd sit down, it's on, not on the wrong input because Cooper's playing Xbox. I go switch it, go sit back down. Where's the remote? Why didn't, you know, it's my own fault for not thinking to grab the Roku remote, but I didn't. So now I get up again and I'm like rooting through the laundry and like, where did the thing go? Because the kids just throw it all over the place. No, it's like the mood I'm in when I want to watch TV, it's usually really late. Everyone's in bed and I'm pretty much close to exhausted. And this is the last thing I'm going to do before I go to bed.
And right. You just want to collapse on the couch and have it happen.
Walk downstairs, shut off the lights, tell the TV to play something. Goliath. I just watched Goliath too. Oh man, that's so good.
Yeah. I'm about four episodes into Goliath.
And so the thing with this is I haven't watched one thing on Netflix since I got this, which is partially, it's because there are two shows I've been binge watching on, well, or just addicted to on
Amazon,
Prime, Prime Video, but I haven't tested the Netflix integration yet. And I'm going to guess it's not as good, which will of course lead me to be like, well, I can either get up and look for because the Fire Cube has a remote.
Right.
I have not used it once yet, but, you know, it'll be like sitting there like, I can either get up and find the remote to watch something on Netflix maybe, or I can just talk to Alexa to play something on Prime Video.
Find something on Prime Video. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's the interesting points there, I think, are that Alexa is powering stuff that is powering different stuff, and the different stuff is being treated differently.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some core features of Alexa, the ability to, you know, the natural language processing and understanding your intent and all of that, and then being able to report it back to you in the ways that it is that are best suited to the device. So if there's a screen, it's going to do something very different than if there isn't a screen. And if it's if it's capable of accepting a phone call or whatever you want to call it, it's going to, you know, all these things are different. So the user experience is different. They're not enforcing a uniform user experience across all these devices, which I find really, really smart. I think it's cool and smart, and it would have been the lazy thing to do, and it really makes a big difference.
Yeah, they're not just bolting this set of features onto everything they can put it on. They're tailoring it to the use cases for each device.
Yeah, 100%. Very cool. And last little gadget update. I don't really want to turn this into a gadget show, but I just got a... I just got super frustrated with iOS the other day, and honestly, I can't even remember why right now, but I was like, I am so sick of this. and I bought a Pixel 2, which is, I think a Pixel 3 is probably going to come out around in the fall, maybe around Christmas, but mm-hmm. I was like, oh, whatever. I wanted to get it. So I got it. It's like not the nicest hardware. It's nice hardware. It's not amazing. Mm-hmm. But it's nice. It kind of looks like an iPhone 5, to tell you the truth. But the screen's just too big on the iPhone 10 or iPhone X or whatever it is for me. And this one's a little bit smaller. It's a lot lighter. But I was nervous because maybe a year ago I said, forget it. I'm going all in on iOS. I stopped carrying an Android phone.
I had to rethink our friendship for a little bit.
Well, the problem was, this was at the same time I bought the iPad Pro, and I wanted to simplify all my workflows for various things.
Yeah, I get why you did it. It's good in theory.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, it's sort of an anti-developer type of thing to do. You know, just sort of lock yourself into the ecosystem. And man, am I locked into it. It's like, in that year, there were a couple of things... that when I ordered the phone, the Pixel, and then, so I was like, oh, I won't be using this iPhone very much longer. Oh, the other thing was Erica wants it for the camera. She has to take a bunch of yarn pictures, and the camera's really, mm-hmm. really good on the iPhone X. So she's like, oh, you know, I'd love to use that. Okay, so I'm going to give that to her and use the Pixel. So then in that sort of lame duck period while I was waiting for the Pixel to show up, I was realizing how much stuff I do on the iPhone that I was afraid I was not going to be able to do on the Pixel. Number one, most biggest lock-in, AirPods. Mm-hmm. Mm. I was like, there's no way, there's just no way I'm going back to wired headphones. Not happening. I will never plug wired headphones into a phone again. It's not doing it. I cannot believe, I didn't realize how much that had become part of my daily routine to, you know, after dinner, I plug in my phone, I turn on a podcast usually a podcast, sometimes an audiobook, and clean up the kitchen. And that is not changing. I'm not doing that. I'm never washing dishes again with a wire between my ears and my pocket. So I was like, but the good news is the AirPods work better than I expected with the Pixel.
That's good.
Yeah. They don't have some of the fancy features, like you can't double tap them to pause and start the music or the podcast. And when you take them out, it keeps playing, which I actually like. But yeah, they work just fine. So I can stick with that. Thank goodness. And then the other thing was, there were two other things. Paying. I pay with my phone all the time. I almost never have to use a credit card anymore. But it turns out I tested this morning and the Pixel 2 works just fine.
That's good. There is nowhere around here that you can pay with your phone. Like, we're still stuck in the, you know, it's just not possible here.
Yeah. I mean, there's McDonald's will, but you probably don't go there.
No.
Yeah. So it's like, for me, it's Whole Foods, my coffee place that is in the building, any place that uses Square, you can do it. So basically all the coffee places around here use Square, and Whole Foods, and the Bottles liquor store near us takes it. Mm-hmm. Basically everyone around here takes it. The only places that don't are like restaurants tend not to.
Yeah.
So I was very excited about that. And the last thing was, there are a couple of apps that are deeply ingrained in my daily workflow that do not have Android equivalents, or at least not by the same developer. So that's a real drag. So I'm looking for new solutions for Productive on iOS. If anybody has advice, Productive on iOS, which is a recurring to-do app.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that's the one we were talking about, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And that was why I was talking about it. I'm like, this would be so easy. This should be a web thing because Kilo works just fine on the Pixel 2.
Yeah.
And
well, we can make it a web thing.
Yeah, I might be after you for that. And the other thing is Ulysses, which is, I'm going to solve, I think, a different way. But Ulysses is like a writer app that you can write in Markdown, and then you can copy to the clipboard. And this is the crucial detail. You can copy it to the clipboard as HTML, not an entire HTML page, but just an HTML snippet, which is the key feature that I need. And I've looked at IA Writer and a couple of other Markdown to HTML apps on Android, and none of them do what I need. So
yeah.
Such a,
I think there's a version of Ulysses for the Mac desktop, but
there is, yeah. Well, and I like that too because they sync over iCloud. It's one of the only things I use iCloud for, or whatever it's called. It keeps everything in sync. So that's been really nice. I go back and forth between the desktop version and the phone version, but I need both, so I'll have to come up with some other approach. I think what I'm going to do is, I might write a little bit of code and use Gmail as the editor because Gmail shows up everywhere. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it just the takeaway for me is like, wow, it did not take long for me to get really trapped, feeling really trapped into iOS. Where back in the day, I would never have touched anything with a 10-foot pole that didn't have, you know, like equivalents on both platforms because I was using daily, I would switch back and forth between phones. So it kept me really sort of free, if you will, like not trapped in an ecosystem. But this is, so looks like I'm escaping, but wow, it was a little bit like, oh man, you gotta be kidding me. I have to keep this phone because there's some app, which is exactly what Apple wants.
Because of one app. Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, I'd rather spend some money and build one.
Right.
So cool. So that was longer than I thought it was going to be, but I think people would be interested in the gadget update.
Do you want to just turn that into a gadget and stuff episode and do the image thing next week?
I don't think the image thing is that long.
Don't think so? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have new gadgets, but one thing I did mention last week that I think also didn't come out was I've received my copy of Gloomhaven and we have been playing it, and I've now had another week to play it and I love it just as much. So if you're looking for an amazing board game, that's probably, it's the most expensive board game I've ever purchased, but it has been well worth it. And if you're into board games or Dungeons and Dragons or that kind of thing, I like it better than D&D.
Wow. That's saying something.
And yeah. It's been all kinds of fun.
Cool.
If you can get your hands on a copy, they sell out like super fast.
Huh. Where do people there must be like gaming blogs and stuff
like boardgamegeek.com.
Okay. So people just like it spreads like wildfire and everybody runs out and buys it.
Mm. Yeah. And I pre-ordered on Amazon, and you know, if you're paying more than $140 for it, you're paying too much. There are some places that, I mean, you know, it's the whole supply and demand. It goes out of stock and then people start selling it for $300 a copy, that kind of thing.
Right. Is it the kind of thing that you can get in stores? It's ginormous. So, or is it just Amazon?
There might be some retail game stores that sell it, but there's none of them near me. I'm sure some of the larger. I'm sure if you have like a brick and mortar game store that they either stock it or can order it. You're not going to just be able to like go into a Target and buy it. It's not the type of game that like the big box retailers would stock. But if you have a, you know, specifically a game store near you.
Hmm. Cool. Wow. Oh, that sounds like fun. We don't have room in our house for it, but it does sound good.
You definitely need a lot of room for it. It showed up and it's like, here's 22 pounds of cardboard. Have fun.
Nice.
Yeah. The box is like, you could put a small child in it. So
yeah, it's huge. I saw pictures of it. It's like bigger than a bread box.
Yeah.
All right. Want to talk feature?
Sure. Let's talk feature.
Where do you get your news?
Try my best not to these days.
Yeah, I have to agree. So I get it. I've been on Twitter a little bit more than I was, say, a year or two ago. It's kind of died down there. But that is that's a big place where I get news. And the other big place is like Erica tells me stuff that she saw.
Right.
On, she reads the iOS news thing, whatever that is, that sort of news built-in thing that iOS has.
Yeah, I try to ignore articles and things that are posted on Facebook because they're constant and annoying, but I do have a couple of sites that I go to get news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I go to. I have an FT subscription that I find to be reasonably impartial and reasonably international. But I haven't checked. I was reading it a lot in, you know, around 2006 to 2016, 2017, because I could not be on social media. I think a lot of people had the same experience. But I did want to know what was going on because I felt like a lot of stuff was going on. But I wanted it to be, I wanted it to not be screaming at me. So the Financial Times definitely fit the bill there, but it is a paid subscription. So obviously fake news is a big thing. People talking about it, Facebook making big steps to try and combat it, the whole Russian thing. And I'm not going to get into politics here, but the thing is, generally, I think it's probably true. It's got to be true with our listeners that most people get their news online and not from like a physical newspaper. And I would even tend to, I would wonder how much people get news from cable TV or whatever, broadcast TV.
Yeah, the only time I watch news on broadcast TV is when I go to a restaurant and that's what's on.
Yep. Yeah, same here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the cord cutting numbers are just continue to climb. I think they're even kind of at an inflection point now, which is interesting. But if you imagine that lots of people get their news from social media and online sources and that sort of thing, it's, I mean, the sort of veracity of any of it is really like, okay, let me just cut to the chase. Today we wanted to talk about fake images specifically and the ability to manipulate images using machine learning and AI, like tools that are getting built into Photoshop and similar sort of image editors are incredibly capable of, you know, you just sort of like roughly circle a person in the foreground just with a mouse, like sloppily. Right. And it's like, oh, we know what you meant. And just sort of like grabs the thing. You can move the person over and it magically fills in the background.
Like it decides what the background should be.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really impressive. And you're like, oh, that's cool. And for things like, I don't know, artistic expression or let's say you're trying to preserve or retouch historical photos that have been damaged or, you know, like the find missing children stuff, like a little age a photo of a little kid, that kind of thing. Like, or just even fun stuff like filters and adding AR stickers to pictures just for fun. All of that stuff's like, it's pretty cool. It like,
yeah,
the camera in the Pixel 2 has a sticker. Oh, stickers. Okay. So I figured it was going to be like a big emoji with like, or birthday cake.
Yeah.
So I tap on the stickers thing and it says, move the phone around until it detects the floor. So I'm standing in the kitchen. I kind of like circle the phone around a little bit and then tap on a stormtrooper. I drag a stormtrooper into the scene and it's like, there's a live action stormtrooper standing in my kitchen, moving around and stuff.
And that's the definition of sticker now.
Yeah, that's a sticker. It was good enough that it would fool someone if they were just looking at it closely. Like, oh, you guys dressing up for Halloween?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, oh, Cooper's getting ready for Halloween, posted on Facebook or something. People would totally believe it. It was completely believable. You know, if it wouldn't hold up to scrutiny, but you're not scrutinizing these kind of pictures. You're zooming past them. So for things like that, okay, great, it's fine. But the camera is almost, the camera that everyone has is on their phone. And it almost by definition, almost always is retouching the photo in some way. You know, even if it's just like, I don't know, creating a high definition version of it, or like taking a burst of 15 shots when you press once and then blending them together to make the best one with your eyes open and the best smile. You know, it's they do this. Mm-hmm. So like, how would you not retouch a photo? You know, so like, I know that's not, well, how would you detect a photo that has not been retouched when they've all been retouched? You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So you imagine that these tools for retouching photos are getting amazing, or basically creating, I mean, you're creating an image at a certain point. It's not even, it's a thing that never happened. So can you call it a photo? I guess not. But when there's a malicious intent behind it, and you're trying to get,
like sway public opinion.
Yeah, or create a behavior. You're trying to like mm-hmm. convince people to take action, to do something, especially when it's an irreversible action. That's really intense. You know, propaganda existed. It's a similar sort of concept, basically propagating lies. Okay, we get that.
Whether your intentions are good or evil, you know, I mean, you know, it's still a thing people do. They will use, you know, photos to manipulate emotional responses, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's nothing new. Like, yellow journalism is a real thing. I grew up in a newspaper family, and I know that the newspaper was often wrong, like flat wrong, mm-hmm. you know, not maliciously, but just like, oh, whoops,
yeah,
wrong name or whatever. Whereas in plenty of times that there are plenty of news outlets, even old school legacy from our youth type places, that maybe have a better reputation than some blogger, that still they had their point of view, and they would spin things to support the narrative that their readers wanted to hear, you know, to a certain extent. But mm-hmm. now with the pace, like it's almost like our skepticism hasn't caught up with the technology.
Right.
You know, people will say, oh, you know, you can't believe everything you read online. I'm like, I'm getting to the point where it's like, you can't believe anything you read online.
Right. And I mean, you know, there used to be, back in the day, you could look at a photo, you could, oh, yeah, that's been photoshopped.
You could tell. Right.
Yeah.
So I went to, researching this, I was reading an article. It was called something like 35 viral images and GIFs from 2017 that were fake.
Fake, yeah. And yeah, I saw that.
So going down the list, and it's like, here's the one that went viral. Here's the original. And I'm like, well, who's to say that's the original? Like, why do I believe you? Maybe this whole article's a lie. You know? There's nothing at all that the author of the article could possibly do in the article to prove that they're not the one lying, because everything. So like, as I'm reading this, the whole thing unravels, because the article is saying you can't believe images, but here's one you can believe.
Yeah. It's like, how do we know you're not the one lying?
Right. And okay. There was one where it was a photo from the G20
mm-hmm.
of a bunch of world leaders, kind of like the camera's focused on a chair, and there are a bunch of chairs around that chair. And the chair that was focused on is like someone from the United Kingdom. And I only know that because it said it on the little placard on the front, United Kingdom. So, okay, that person was not sitting there. So the people around that person where they were supposed to be sitting were kind of like leaned in talking to each other.
Yeah.
And someone photoshopped Vladimir Putin into the chair to make it look like everybody was hanging on his every word. And the sort of evidence that it was fake was that lots of photographers had taken lots of pictures of that moment from different angles. And they showed that same picture from different angles with the chair clearly. Excuse me. They showed different angles of that photo with the chair clearly empty.
Mm-hmm.
But and so I believe it, but and you know, it was Gizmodo, so like, how much do I trust Gizmodo? I didn't, you know, I would probably actually, if I knew who the author was, and I don't, I would probably trust that more or less than Gizmodo overall,
right?
You know, if it was like, I don't know, if it was someone I don't know, I'm trying to think of somebody, I can't think of anyone I trust. if it was Cory Doctorow, I trust Cory Doctorow. So I'd be like, okay, fine, but how do I know these other angled photos aren't fake?
Aren't fake.
You know, yeah. Like you just showed me how easy it is to remove a person from a photo. Couldn't you have just taken, you know, 15 angles of this photo and Vladimir Putin was sitting there and you removed him?
And like, then removed him? Yeah.
So therefore this one's fake. And it's like, okay. So it raises the, and that's like, it's political, of course, and it's meant to, you know, it's meant to achieve a reaction, emotional reaction from a particular audience. But there's some like pretty serious ones. Like, there was one of a bus that had, I didn't write down the name of it, but it was sort of a anti-trans, group who paid to have bus wraps put on buses that were like, you know, basically a boy's a boy and a girl's a girl. Keep guys out of our girls' room. You know, like that shenanigans. And so it's inflammatory to a group of people. And, you know, this is bus wraps inflammatory to a group of people. And there were a lot of stories about them being vandalized, which I completely believe, just because I know what people are like. And that seems reasonable, you know, if you consider the consequences.
Subject matter,
and impact of vandalism versus bombing the buses. So there's a picture of one of these buses bombed. And, you know, that's a whole different thing. And it went viral and, you know, people, you could imagine people like donating money, for example, to a cause that they felt was...
That were like, oh, the families of the people on the bus, yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the people who did this bombing, who are presumably the people who don't like the rap.
Right.
Are bad people now because they now see they're bad. They bombed this thing. It's completely fake. Oh, but you know, to combat this, we're going to donate money to this cause. I mean, you know, this could happen. Of course it could happen.
Yeah.
The most hilarious slash scary one was, and this is like, talk about like Inception. Yeah. You don't even know where to start. Okay. So apparently there's a Oliver Stone documentary of Vladimir Putin in which Putin is showing a video on his phone. So like the movie camera is recording Putin's phone playing a video, of a military action. And Putin is saying that it is Russians fighting ISIS in Syria in like, you know, recently 2016 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Gizmodo, and all of this is showing up in Gizmodo, so it could all be completely made up. There might not even be an Oliver Stone documentary. I have no idea, but I believe that part. It'd be so easy to check, but I didn't check. So it might not even be a video of Putin's phone. I don't even know, right? And then it's like, well, no, this is actually a video from 2016 of Americans in Afghanistan. Or sorry, in 2009. It's an earlier video of Americans fighting Taliban in Afghanistan. It's not the Russians fighting ISIS in Syria. And it like the whole thing is like, you're just left thinking, I just don't even, you just want to get off the internet and be like, none of this, I can't validate any of this. So what am I supposed to believe? You know, it's like super, here's the crazy thing. So then confronted with this, apparently as reported by Gizmodo, Putin was confronted with this and someone from his administration said, well, no, the video's real. It came from the Ministry of Defense in Russia. And maybe it did.
Yeah, maybe it did. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's real.
Doesn't mean it's real. Yeah.
They could have pulled it off YouTube because the American one was on YouTube, supposedly. Mm-hmm. And like the more you talk about it, the more you're like, I mean, think about how scary that is. I mean, like Trump tweeted something like, you know, they challenged him on some fact. And he's like, I don't know. I just know what I read on the internet. Well, that's reassuring. So like at what point? So the thing that's interesting there is about Gizmodo and the Ministry of Defense is that the sort of chain of custody of the video or the photo, the photo inherits the trust that the receiver has in the organization that gave it to them. So
never mind where that organization got it from.
Yeah, that doesn't get questioned. Because that organization has something to lose if it turns out that they violated the receiver's trust. So let's just say that somebody in the Ministry of Defense, just hypothetically, or let's just say, never mind Putin, let's just say in the United States, let's just say the Department of Defense is under pressure to provide some video to prove some point the president wants to prove, and they pull some video that's not actually what they say it is. It's a real video, but it's not doctored or anything. They just say it's something that it isn't. And they give it to him, and he does his thing, and like, okay, great. If that blows up in the receiver, in this case, the president's face, then theoretically, he would then trust the source less. So it's on the source. If the source wants to, or the outlet wants to maintain the trust that people have in them, it's on them to validate, and this sort of chain goes all the way down. But it's not working. Or at least in lots of cases, it's not working because we're not looking at things with a critical eye. And even if we were, what would you even do?
Yeah.
Which brings it back to technology. So Adobe has, or at least one person, I don't know how many people, but they have at least one person working on AI detection of tampering. So an AI that can detect tampering in photos. It looks at things like noise distribution and like overly strong edges between foreground and background and like lighting inconsistencies and stuff like that to be like, yeah, this it's unlikely that this is real. And, you know, they've presumably got a lot of source material of like doctored images, you know, presumably Photoshop has a lot of cloud storage and they've got tons of things in there that are like, okay, this is fake. These are all fake.
It's Photoshop cloud storage. They're probably every single one of them is probably fake to some degree.
Yeah. So
I'm just thinking, it's like, I happen to know where about 5 million somewhat fake images are myself. You know?
Yeah. No kidding. Right. I mean, look at that. Like we've got photos uploading that are every single one of them's retouched by us.
Right. They're not quote unquote fake, yeah. But they've been retouched either by algorithms or by people.
Mm hmm. Resized, compressed, all of that stuff. So like, what is the, I feel like if people are to believe what they read, and they're probably reading it on their phones, that this needs to be built into the phone.
Yeah, it almost does.
Yeah.
Like this photo is 20% fake. This photo is 60% fake.
Right.
Because you can't just give them an either or, because there's, like you said, there's retouching that goes on in every photo. And like even the accurate stuff that you want to keep, like, you know, like if you take a portrait of someone, photographer's likely going to remove blemishes and fix shadows. And so there's always going to be some degree of fakeness.
Right. It would need to be on by default, and it would need to be phone wide. So any like images that you're seeing, I believe me, I have no idea how this would actually work. But let's just say it was built into the browser, you know, so you could, okay, at least when you're reading a browser, never mind apps, you know, but the browser itself, or it could be an underlying rendering library that renders like JPEG, you know, the various image formats. It could be built into that to have like, you know, when you see like, you ever click on a link and Chrome is like, oh, this might be a dangerous site, or this has been reported as malware or something like that.
Yeah.
It gives you like a security warning. You could almost have like a, yeah, like you said, like a little line across the bottom, like a veracity line.
Mm-hmm.
And it would, you know, be longer or shorter depending on how much retouching has happened or the severity or the nature of the retouching. And as you were scrolling through articles, you know, if you're in people.com or Entertainment Weekly, yeah, they're all going to be, they're all going to be like slimmed down or whatever. You're going to expect those lines to be more extreme. But if you're on the New York Times site or the Wall Street Journal site or Al Jazeera or something, you're going to want those to be, you know, a lot less messed with.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool. I mean, still, we're just moving our trust from the news organization to the Apple. Algorithm.
Yeah.
Or you know, Android, basically,
Adobe or
Samsung, but that would be a cool feature. That would be so cool if like somebody posted like on Twitter, like, oh, look at this. Look at this thing that happened. Everyone should click here to donate to my GoFundMe because it's so mean that this happened to me and it's completely fake.
Warning, this photo is 67% fake.
Right. Yeah, that'd be so great. Oh, that would be cool. All right, solved. We solved it.
There we go. Solving the world's problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's tempting to say, oh, there needs to be a new image format, or, well, how does
no one's going to adopt a new image format that universally.
No way. And how would you even know? Like, you'd have to turn off the old ones.
Right. Yeah, you would. Yeah. Like, I obviously have never done anything with AI, but I did write a script once to do edge detection in photos and compare two photos. And it was basically you would take two versions of the same photo and it would compare them and it would go, oh, this version is too blurry.
Mm.
And it was super interesting and pretty mathematically intense. And yeah, like I can't imagine doing that at a large scale. You definitely need the power of AI.
Mm-hmm. Right. I wonder if it could start off as an app. Like, so if you said like, I want to have like a news reader that has this feature built into it. It's mm-hmm. almost like, and you know, who should build it? Snopes. Maybe like the Snopes reader. And it, you know, they could do a combination of like Mechanical Turk and, you know, cause they get stuff reported and they do research on not just photos, but like veracity of just stories. And, maybe they have, I wouldn't be surprised if they had that already. We'll have to check for our Snopes app afterwards. Probably iOS only. Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm here to tell you that there are people working on AI that could provide this capability. So mm-hmm. it stands to reason that once the models are trained, the resulting algorithm is generally a lot smaller than you don't need as much computing power to run it as you do to teach it.
To figure it out in the first place. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But then the algorithms that make the fake images are going to get better and better. And eventually we're just going to be competing AIs.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's coming.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, buckle your seatbelt.
Like, AI is going to be so commonplace in everything. Like, it's already becoming super, like, it's already everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to change everything, and we're not even going to notice because it's just become normal.
Yeah, the software we're already using is just going to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, wow, this is like magic. This is so good. You know?
Well, that's because your instant messenger app on your phone is now smarter than you are.
Maybe the instant messenger apps should vote.
Maybe.
Yeah. So, you know, and I guess in the meantime, it's like a healthy degree of skepticism, please. Like really healthy, because it's so easy. I was reading one of these articles. Oh, God, what was it? I can't remember the article, but I checked the date to see if it was April 1st. I'm like, because I was looking for, mm-hmm. you know, tech articles to talk about. I'm reading
check
this one.
Check the date, see if it's April 1st. Make sure you're not reading The Onion. Yeah.
Yeah, right? Well, do that always. It's April 1st every day now. It really is. All right. Maybe that's a good place to leave it.
Yeah, probably so.
All right, folks. That's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.
Bye.